Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, a new redistricting challenge is underway after a group of Democratic voters are asking the courts to throw out Wisconsin's congressional maps. Plus, Governor Tony Evers stands behind his immigration enforcement guidance to state workers amid additional warnings by the Trump administration. And the budget-making process is underway after Republicans vote to remove hundreds of policy items in Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 9th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week we begin with a new redistricting challenge to the congressional maps here in Wisconsin. Now, this is one of two lawsuits. First, we're going to recap one of them that was filed yesterday. So Democratic voters are asking the state Supreme Court to toss out the current congressional maps and to write new ones. Now, this new challenge argues the court's decision to redraw the state's legislative maps a few years ago reopened the door to revisit Wisconsin's House seats. Now, like I mentioned, this is one of two lawsuits, but they're both seeking different pathways of how to get there. But what we want to talk about, of course, is why people should care. Because if one of these cases are successful, JR, this could give Democrats a pathway to picking up more seats in Congress.
It could, but it also requires the court to forget what it did just about 15 months ago. And so let me kind of walk through this with a little history lesson and get to the kind of big picture thing. But so 2011, Republicans controlled both House legislature and the governor's office. They passed bills. New maps legislature, new map for Congress. A decade later, Democratic Governor Tony Evers, Republican lawmakers can't agree on new maps. Goes to the Supreme Court. That court, a conservative majority, says you have to take a least change approach to the lines drawn in 2011 when you submit maps to us to consider. Ultimately, the court picked the map that Evers drew for Congress. Republicans drew for legislature. 2023, new court, liberal majority, gets a challenge to that legislative map and says, hey, this map's unconstitutional. There are municipal islands, that's not kosher. We're going to throw out that map and in the process say that least change standard, no good anymore. Mark Elias, Democratic super attorney, files this lawsuit in early 2024 saying, hey, if that's not there anymore, then you should overturn this congressional map as well. Court analysis says, no thanks. Okay, so two lawsuits, both asking court to take original action, both arguing least change is a problem. If that's not an application anymore for legislative maps, should be for congressional ones, that should go. Court said no just in a year and a half ago. Okay, hurdle number one. Hurdle number two, the second lawsuit says that these districts are not apportioned correctly. You're supposed to have equal population among districts. There's a difference of two people in some districts. They say one's the maximum. Now, I'm not an attorney's often say, never know what courts are gonna do, but in talking to some people in the legal profession, kind of a high bar to toss out an entire congressional map over deference of one person. So we'll see. The third component is an argument from the Elias lawsuit that this is a partisan, the 2011 map, partisan gerrymander. This is a quintessential gerrymander. This cannot stand. It violates the Wisconsin Constitution, rights, equal protection, and other kinds of things. Challenge there. In 2011, yes, Republican lawmakers drew a legislative map for the Senate and the Assembly that gave them a huge advantage. No two ways about that. That was their intent. Call it a gerrymander, call it good politics, that's your perspective at home. The congressional map was a way different process. At the time, Andy Speth was the chief of staff to Paul Ryan. He was given the task of drawing the map. So he gave a deposition. There was a 2011 lawsuit that challenged that congressional map. Gave a deposition early 2012 and said, okay, this is what I did. Paul Ryan told me to be fair. That's right, F-A-I-R, fair, to be bipartisan, to ask the members what they want with this map. And he went through each of them. Yeah, Sean Duffy, who just won the seat in northern Wisconsin, said, I want to short my district. It had been in Democrat hands for 40 years. I want some more Republican. Tammy Baldwin, who was the second congressional district person back then, said, I want to have a more compact district because I want to go see my constituents and I want long drives. Tom Petri, Republican next door in Fond du Lac, said, yeah, me too. Reed Ribble up in the Green Bay area said, hey, if you expand my district, I kind of like it Calumet County because I've got property down there. This is not something very partisan, does it, Emily, to you?
No, it does not.
Okay. So again, not that there was not anything partisan about what was done or that wasn't in consideration, but Ron Kind, there was a map drawn that took the second district that Baldwin's in and pushed it over the Mississippi River. And Kind said, hey, I'm the Mississippi guy. This is my corridor. I want this map to look like this. So again, that was the deposition he gave in 2012. So you have a dispute about whether this map is a partisan gerrymander. Why is that important? Original actions, typically with a court, it means the court takes it directly without going to the lower courts. They don't want disputes. They want the facts to be settled. You have a dispute. There's a challenge in getting that case before the Supreme Court if the court follows past precedent, which of course they want to do. We've seen that. So there's one hurdle. Another hurdle. I know it is only May of 2025, but there's a question, will court act soon? The term's almost over.
Right.
They're not hearing oral arguments anymore. Crawford takes the bench August 1st. Will they decide to take this now before he's on the bench? If they do, what would she do?
This was a key issue during her campaign. She didn't want to talk about it, but it was a big talker. And it's something that Republicans also indicated, this is coming. They tried to campaign on it.
And so if Crawford agrees to hear it and sit on it, how would that look for her after what happened? There's that whole issue. Then look at the prospect of if you mess with congressional maps, there's a thing called the U.S. Supreme Court over here. They get involved sometimes with that. What I'm getting at is there are some interesting arguments in these lawsuits. I'm not going to judge if they're good or bad. But there are challenges to get them before the Supreme Court, Wisconsin, number one, and two, have new lines in place by fall of 2026. It's not that easy. The court moved at incredible speed with legislative maps a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different challenge for them.
And like I said, when we hear from Republicans after these lawsuits were filed, you know, they expected this.
Yes.
Even though there was some Democrats I know that I spoke to that, hey, we don't really want to go there. It's going to be a tough uphill battle. Yet there's a lot of Democrats in this state. So if they think they can do it, they're going to do it and try to take that opportunity. But as we've mentioned before, when the court takes so many high stakes issues, it could potentially backfire politically. We know there's also another state Supreme Court race next year. All eyes are going to be on that. Now, of course, it's conservative that is up for re-election. But, you know, it's still going to be a huge conversation in the race because of the stakes, definitely.
Excellent point.
All right, let's get to our next topic, which is Governor Tony Evers once again defending his memo that he sent to state workers last month. Why? Because there's been increasing threats by the Trump administration warning him that he could potentially face criminal consequences over this. So this is all centered around what happened last Friday when the White House border czar, Tom Homan, doubled down on his warning to Governor Tony Evers. The first warning was last week after he suggested that he could be arrested over this policy. Now, on Evers, I asked him about it when he was at an event at West Bend, and he reiterated that there was nothing illegal about the memo that he sent, which directed state workers to not talk to federal immigration officers without first contacting an attorney. Now, Homan, at the border czar, again alluded that Evers could face charges over this guidance. Let's first just hear from Governor Evers responding to the latest warning from Homan.
I would think he would have more important things to do than mess around with the governor from Wisconsin. I made myself clear, I have done nothing wrong. The memo doesn't prevent ICE from doing anything that you would normally do. We just wanted to make sure that our employees, if they're asked by somebody from ICE that came in, that we have an attorney there to make sure that everything is on the up and up. It's as simple as that.
So while we're hearing from Homan constantly talk about this when people like Fox News are asking him about it, I asked the governor's spokesperson saying, hey, have you heard from the Trump administration? They have not. So this could just be maybe them just, hey, I'm going to talk about this. You know, more is to come when it comes to governors that break the law. But in Governor Evers' view, he hasn't done anything wrong. And in reality, I mean, is there anything wrong with trying to contact an attorney before talking to someone? I mean, we've been talking to lawyers about this. They don't think so. So
this is called saber rattling. Look, the Trump administration wants to send a message. That is why Hannah Dugan is facing felony charge right now, took her out of the courthouse in cuffs. Like, they want to send a message to local officials that, hey, we mean business about this immigration stuff. There's a difference between what Dugan's accused of doing and Evers sending a memo to state employees. there's also the reality that if you were to arrest a 73-year-old governor and haul him out of the Capitol in handcuffs, you would make him a martyr politically, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally. I mean, he'd be a cause for liberals across the country. You would open up a fundraising spigot for him for next year. I had a Republican tell me this week, look, if they arrested Evers, you'd kiss the race next year goodbye. Like, it would almost guarantee him a win. So I'm not seeing a real effort here to arrest the governor. I think we're just kind of like throwing a lot of words out right now. The governor, interesting enough, some conservative commentators want to go, oh, is he afraid? Is he like backing down? The video he did last week, the governor's not great at like talking tough. That's not his manner. He's a nice, easygoing guy, right? People generally like him. Talking tough is not his forte. So when he goes on video and says, I'm not afraid, I'm not backing down, some Republicans are like, oh, he's on the run. No, this is Tony. That's just his personality. That's how he talks.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And this all just comes, of course, as Wisconsin has been in the spotlight, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. with the whole immigration issue after the arrest of Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan. All right, let's move on to the budget-making process, the sausage-making process, which officially kicked off this week after members on Joint Finance voted to remove over 600 provisions in Governor Tony Evers' budget. It's actually 612 to be exact, which is always a party-line vote to remove things like medical marijuana, paid family leave, as well as knocking out tax hikes on the wealthiest earners, child tax credits, and much, much more. Now, for those who maybe not know if this is unusual, well, it's not, because ever since Governor Tony Evers was elected, Republicans do this every 2 years to really begin the process, and they're going to go back to base and then kind of, you know, work out the budget from there over the next several weeks in hopes of having it by the summer. Let's first just hear from some of the dueling arguments that were made, which is even Senator Howard Markline. He is the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, saying, look, there are things that I even like in this budget. However, if it's policy, it needs to be through separate legislation. Still, Democrats were very frustrated with the vote on Thursday. Let's take a listen.
If they're popular items, then they should be drafting a separate bill, and it should go through the normal legislative process. I mean, I can point to things in the budget budget bill that we're going to pull off that I like. You know, milk labeling is something that I like. And we're pulling that out as well. It's a policy. It's got nothing to do with the budget.
We have the option to not take it back to base. How about if we just fix the budget right now? We could do that, but we're not. We're playing these budget games. And so when it's all about, oh, well, this is just the thing that we do, it doesn't have to be.
So there's also something to note when it comes to investments in health care, child care, criminal justice. It's not like they're not going to do that. And I'm talking about Republicans. They still will do that. But what Democrats often argue is that it's not going to be enough. Well, they can control the legislature. They can control the process. But they need to reach some type of agreement and have a document that the governor is going to sign. And there's been, for the past few weeks, a big discussion about where is this tax plan? Where are the tax cuts? Evers has long said he wants it in the state budget. That's where it should be. Republicans have said, nope, we're going to send you a separate bill. But JR, you have been reporting on more meetings between GOP leaders and Governor Evers. Are they any closer? You tell me.
So I don't get the impression they are. Devin Lemahue, majority in the Senate, went to a panel discussion with the Bankers Association and said, basically, we need a meeting with Governor Evers, right? Like, we want to meet. We need to get this thing going. I need to meet by the end of next week to keep budget deliberations progressing. So I went and asked the governor's office, have you guys met? No, but staff met this week, had discussions. We need a tax plan from Republicans, an agreement to tell us where they're at. Lemmy's office gave me a statement, says, we've got an agreement. We gave it to the governor back in March, which is confusing a little bit because I reported before that they met March 26th, Robin Voss, Devin Lemahue, and the governor. In mid-April, I talked to Robin, and he said, yeah, we still like a tax cut that focuses on retirement income. The Senate likes the third highest tax bracket. We're not quite there yet. And Devin's saying, we've had this agreement for the governor since end of March. This is when you have to report via statement. I can't ask a follow-up question to a statement, so I'm not quite sure where Devin's at. But they are talking, at least their staffs are. We don't have a clear idea what this tax package looks like, and it's going to be a key piece to getting this budget done. So, I don't know. This whole thing this week with the Joint Finance Committee, kind of business as usual. 612 items this time. 580 2 years ago, 350 or 400 4 years ago. I mean, like 6 years ago, it was 130. It was like light
right.
back then. But this isn't unusual. They cut $4 billion in spending overall from the governor proposed and ended up nixing $2.83 billion in revenue upwards through taxes. So that's the net effect of the tax increases Evers proposed and the tax cuts he proposed. For example, they took out the cash tax on tips break he wants to do. They bring that back? Yeah, possibly. So just because it's not there now doesn't mean it can't come back later on.
Right. And, of course, prisons we know is a big thing, too. Mm-hmm. Governor had his plan to close Green Bay Correctional Center. We know Republicans don't want to do that. But, I mean, there's all sorts of things going on that we will learn in the coming weeks as they start crafting this. All right. Let's get to wrapping up some of the committee work this week. As we know that the Assembly is going to be on the floor next week with kind of a health care theme, as they usually do. Senate possibly going to be on the floor as well. But here's what happened this week, some of the noteworthy bills that were in public testimony. AB 231 provide tax incentives to film and TV production and create a dedicated film office. Another proposal would create a similar tax breaks for those producing video games here in the battleground state. AB 240 would give tax exemptions for handlers of search and rescue dogs that would help them provide paying for equipment like GPS monitoring and other stuff. AB 88 would provide tougher penalties on protesters who participate in riots and damage properties. Now, AB 88, that has been introduced before. The governor has vetoed it. AB 231 about tax incentives for film and TV production, that was introduced late last session. And when I talked to the bill sponsors then, they were like, we just want to get this conversation going. So it does have bipartisan support this time. And kind of the whole aspect of it, too, that it could have more legs this year is that Governor Tony Evers also included a similar tax break in his state budget. His is about a 25%. The bill does 30. So we could see some compromise on that in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, it looks like some on the floor on Tuesday, Senate on Thursday. Not a great chance of finance meeting on Wednesday. They're going to wait a little while to get really going on this budget. So something to watch.
All right. And we did talk about this a little bit earlier in the show about Hannah Dugan, the Milwaukee County judge, and her arrest this week. It was just noteworthy that a bipartisan group of 150 former federal and state judges criticized the entire arrest. Now, this happened, of course, last month, but the letter was sent to U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi on Monday. The letter takes issue with the way federal officials publicized Dugan's arrest, which they argue was an attempt to intimidate the judicial system. Now, we've talked about this before, very different from Evers and Holman's whole issue over this guidance. This is some serious charges. You know, yes, it's great that she has some people supporting her, but the Trump administration really wants to send a message, not only to individuals here in Wisconsin, but make it, you know, known across the country that they are going to be enforcing their immigration policies.
Yeah, appearance next week in court, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
So all eyes will be on that. All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is the number of lawsuits. I mean, I lost count. I thought it was about 12. And, Jer, of course, you are about 14 and 15
yes.
this week with how many Evers and Attorney General Josh Call have filed against the Trump administration.
Number 14 was over RFK Jr. trying to dismantle, in the words of the lawsuit, the Health and Human Services Department. Number 15 was over grants the state was expecting from bipartisan infrastructure law for EV charging stations. Like, a lot of stuff all goes back to the same argument over and over again. You cannot have a president, by executive order, cut spending. Congress is the power of the purse strings. They set these things in statute. Ergo, you must repeal a statute to repeal the money. So I don't know how these are going to go, but it's like it's also part of the pushback. Democrats, if you look at their numbers right now in polling, they're not great. Part is because their own base isn't happy with them. They want fighters, people pushing back against Trump. This is part of that kind of like pushback against Trump, which is good for Tony Evers and Josh Call with their base because that's what the base wants.
It's also worth noting that all of these lawsuits, I want to say almost all of them, are coalitions.
Yeah.
So it's not just Wisconsin. You know, they're joining attorneys, generals from across the U.S. to try to, you know, power in numbers type of thing. My curiosity is going to be, once this is all said and done, is how much this could cost, right? I mean, this is not cheap to sue consistently. But we have seen a lot of actions, especially executive orders, by President Trump be challenged and be unsuccessful. So he's still going to, I'm assuming, going to keep issuing executive orders without action by Congress, and there's going to still be a lot more legal challenges to come, I would suspect. Mix this week. Susan Crawford. Well, I was trying to think, Judge-elect, yes. Susan Crawford, because we want to talk about, you know, the political angle of these congressional new lawsuits.
So, look, this whole campaign, the argument was she was going to rig the maps for Democrats. So remember, there was a fundraising call early campaign in which the sponsors billed it as a chance to flip in this race two House seats. Now, Crawford's campaign said she wasn't aware it was billed as that. She said repeatedly, I have not promised anybody anything. The fact this came a month after she was elected, people are going, okay, we knew it was going to happen. So what's this mean for her? Again, we talked about like the dynamic of will the court take it? When might it take it? If it does take it and she's now on the court come August 1st, could she hear it? If she didn't hear it, what's that mean? Because you have a 3-3 tie between Democrats and liberals and conservatives are still those names, the court system. It's kind of a mess for a little bit. You just kind of see that this can be problematic. I mean, voters forget things after 10 years. But is that the look you want to have your first big thing when you come on the bench is, oh, you're delivering on a campaign promise to Democrats, you know, when it comes to House seats. Second piece, though, is for Republicans, yeah, I mentioned all these hurdles for the court to take this case. They can't take this lightly. I mean, we're talking a narrow majority for the Republicans in the House in D.C. Anything that threatens it could be a problem. And then, two, you've got to, if you're Brian Stauber, Derek Van Orden, you have to be kind of preparing yourself the possibility of, hey, this could come down the pipe. What do I do if it does? You would see they likely target those two guys, the new map. So for them, it's kind of like, yeah, there are hurdles, but I'm being on guard until I know for sure it's not going to happen.
It's also an issue that they can campaign on, right, to really message it as well. Also a thing that I'm watching for, of course, it was 2 years ago when Justice Protasiewicz, this was a whole issue with the legislative maps. Yep. She, you know, suggested they were unconstitutional. Now, the difference between Justice-elect Susan Crawford is that she hasn't really talked much about it, but there are clips, even myself, other reporters, asking her whether she would welcome another challenge about congressional maps. I would suspect possibly we see the state Republican Party, other Republicans file complaints with the courts asking for her to recuse or, you know, she had, you know, somewhat misconduct, right? We see all these complaints filed. So I think we could potentially see that down the road if and when they accept this case.
Protasiewicz said the map was rigged, mm-hmm. and her words still heard the case, and there was recusal motions filed against her. She rejected those and just kind of trucking on.
And impeachment calls,
yes.
Right? Okay. All right. Let's get to falling this week. And this is another tie-in to the state budget on Medicaid expansion. It was one of the items pulled, which is always pulled, that Evers has proposed it every 2 years since he was elected. But it eats up a lot of money.
Yes. And so we have a lot of money on the surface. All right. So right now, as we sit here today, the Fiscal Bureau's last analysis said we're going to have $4.3 billion in the bank come June 30th. And then growth of $1.85 billion over the next two-year period. Sounds like a lot. The issue, though, is that if you take away expansion, you drive up your costs. So expansion is, right now, with Medicaid, you can cover people up to 130% of the federal poverty line through the program. That's the expansion. Right now, the cutoff is 100% in Wisconsin. You go to 133. Wisconsin is it differently, and Republicans did this under Scott Walker. They took those folks 100% to 133 and put them into the exchanges. That's part of the Affordable Care Act. So that's a better way. It's expansion welfare, in their words. Well, when you expand Medicaid, there's a whole pot of money that comes down the pipe. I think in the budget it said it would save us $1.9 billion, with a B, in general purpose revenue, state tax dollars, while generating $2.5 billion more in federal money. And then goes out to other things. It's a lot of cash. So now that's off the table. So remember I said the joint financing actions cut $4 billion, also nicks $2.8 billion in revenue uppers. Okay. If you don't do expansion and you cover Medicaid as is, the cost, continue, we call it, is $1.6 billion. Now, okay, you're saying, well, we can spend $4.3 though. That's a lot of money. It is. The problem is one-time money. And Medicaid is an ongoing expense. Let me differentiate the two. So one-time money, you got it one time. It's not coming back. So if you spend it, and if your Republicans talk about they want to do like take some of it for building projects, one-time expense, pay for some tax cuts, an ongoing expense. Well, you also got to pay for schools, UW system, all these other things. The ongoing expenses, so that $1.85 billion I talked about, you take $1.6 for Medicaid, that leaves $250 million to cover everything else that you don't create a structural deficit. Structural deficit is, I now have committed so much money going forward that's starting to hold my next budget. That's a problem for some lawmakers, okay? That's a lot I know.
A lot of numbers.
Then there's the also complicating factor of Washington, D.C. They're talking about Medicaid right now. Their ideas like limiting the match on the Affordable Care Act, the expansion. There's talk about waste, fraud, and abuse, all kinds of things to try and attack the federal deficit, federal budget, because they want to shrink it. Is Medicaid going to be one? It complicates the entire budget process for Republicans. It's a big deal. Number two, Fiscal Bureau talked about, they do revenue estimates every mid-May of a budget year. That is one last look at the numbers to say, okay, we gave you numbers in January. Here are new numbers now in mid-February as you get to the meat of the budget. Here's what we think. Well, in March, we talked about a couple shows ago, wasn't a great month of March for income and sales tax collections. What's going to look like when they do the re-estimates for mid-May? Usually, I stress usually, they call it finding more money. It's a rosier prediction from January. Things look better. Last time, they said, nah, things are going to stay as is. There have only been two times I can think of in the previous six or seven budgets they found less money. This could be at least a little bit of a downer. Well, why is that important? Remember that 250 I talked about is left over after 1.85 minus 1.6? You cut that out. Now where's the money? Right?
And don't they want to use part of the surplus, the $4 billion plus, about half of that on tax cuts? So if you are in this financial red and you want to use this money, it just makes things a lot more complicated.
So what I'm saying is we do have a lot of money.
Sure.
And you can spend it. If you spend it one time, that's great. Spend ongoing expenses, you create problems in the future unless you have revenue uppers, which Republicans are not going to do. So it's a lot of money, but not as much as you think it is going forward.
And this just adds one more layer to what we already have talked about of sense, because President Trump is in office, like you said, the DOGE efforts. A lot of Republicans, especially the co-chairs, have downplayed that. But if things come to a head, and they could this summer, especially with what's going on in Washington, this could really messy up the process. Now, they want to still pass a budget on time by June 30th. I'm just holding my breath just a little bit compared to other budget cycles, but sometimes they miraculously get this done, and a lot of people are hopeful for that. All right, that will do it for this week's show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.